Watching Outlaws with Rebecca Hargraves and Devin Stack.
All right.
We're live,
finally. But my little things, I knew I forgot to do something. I had to reboot my computer a few times so that we, and hopefully people can hear me and hear you. I'm assuming they can.
Yeah, let me know the live chat if you can't.
Yeah. My little thing's broken that I use now, of course, because everything breaks.
Oh, it's okay. Work on that, and I'll tell a little story about what just happened. Yeah, Devin, I just had to sit here helplessly because Devin's just, like, yelling, the AV node, the port 4, or what. I'm like, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about. But I do know that it is miraculous that he got whatever he just got fixed, because I was sure that we were just going to have to reschedule, which wouldn't be a big deal. It's not a big deal. Devin always seems to pull it off. He always pulls it off in like the 11th hour.
Well, I guess it was 28 minutes after the 11th hour. You know,
that's okay. That's not a big deal. The audience just had to chill. They're still getting a show, and you know it's going to go a little bit later. Nobody's mad.
That is true.
Well, I had to go into like full mom mode. Like, I'm so proud of you for fixing that problem. Welcome to Outlaws. I'm Rebecca Hargraves.
And I am Devin Stack. And we're live. The way we have it set up, the way we can have our zero latency back and forth, even though we're both in different locations, it's a little convoluted the way the virtual drivers are set up, and they got corrupted or something, and it created a mess before the show. But now it's all straightened out. And we got a good show for you. We thought it'd be a good idea to revisit something that many of you, well, some of you will probably remember and some of you might not, because this was, well, now it's been like 20 years since this was kind of a, well, not quite, about 20 years.
Well, they had a wide span. They were doing this for a long time. So,
But this is a project that if you might remember this started in Bush's last or his final term before Obama, but the Minuteman Project, as the left would describe it, a bunch of vigilante boomers that were going to the border to shoot Mexicans, which would have been super based. It's always
only half of that is true.
Right. Well, the leftist description of the right is, don't you wish you lived in that world?
Like, I know, all the time. Everyone's racist. Everyone's sexist. We indiscriminately kill people. Awesome.
I wish they wrote the script of, like, instead of writing the history books, I wish they wrote, like, what was happening now. Like, I wish the way they described reality was actually what was happening. But, yeah, this is another case of, you know, largely exaggerated. It was, you know, it was mostly peaceful, I guess you could say. There were some incidents, but for the most part, it was like a neighborhood watch. But before we get into that, let's switch to our little video thing, right? Let's see here. Hey, and the wipe's not there, so there was no delay because the wipe got broke too, apparently. All right, so
Devin, no one would have noticed that.
Well, I notice it all. I notice it all. Every little thing drives me crazy. So before we do anything, we should thank our sponsor, mention our sponsor, Antelope Hill, who I believe has a little message for everybody here.
Antelope Hill Publishing is the premier American publishing house for informed and principled political dissidents. They've published essential authors like Dr. Kevin MacDonald, David Irving, Kerry Bolton, Dr. Ricardo Deshaies, Josh Neal, and more. Their catalog includes original works on modern issues like the opioid crisis and the people, and networks pushing transgenderism, as well as original historical sources from National Socialist Germany, Fascist Italy, Spain, Britain, Japan, and Hungary. Many available in English for the first time exclusively through Antelope Hill. Their catalog also includes thrilling fiction novels and beautifully illustrated and wholesome kids' books. Their latest books include Il Duce Massimo, collection of Mussolini's oldest speeches and writings from his time as a socialist organizer, before he was expelled for advocating for Italian intervention in World War I. Germany in Stalin's crosshairs, history book by a former East German military officer, using Red Army archives to demonstrate conclusively that the Soviet Union was planning to attack Germany first. Imperium of Thought. Collection of writings from Dutch members of the SS about the world historical importance of National Socialism and Hitler. Whatever your interest is, you are sure to find something you want at Antelope Hill Publishing. Check them out to support our friends and sponsor, and use the code OUTLAWS for 10% off your order.
Oh my gosh, yeah, use the code OUTLAWS for 10% off your order. I wonder if there's something in our clause about our ads not being creepy. I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything about that. I did interview Kurt Seidel on Germany and Stalin's Crosshairs, that book, and it went really well. It was really interesting. I have major gaps in my historical knowledge on Barbarossa and this specific event. So if you're kind of a historical newbie and you don't know a ton about World War II and you were propagandized, it's an excellent video. Check it out on my YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, in my interview segment. Thank you, Devin. Right. That was so cute.
Well, you know, I was going for creepy. So, mission accomplished.
But he had a little tail. His little tail was going like this.
Yeah, he was dancing around with a psychotic smile on his face and thinking about Hitler as he danced about. So, but anyway,
today
we're here.
Today is one of those topics where it unfolded in a way that was completely different from what I was expecting. And I'm kind of disappointed. But there are greater lessons to be learned about this whole fiasco.
Well, yes, absolutely. Because it was one of these things where, to be honest, I was thinking to myself, whatever happened to those guys? You know, like I remember hearing about them, and then you start to look into what happened to those guys. You're like, fuck. Oh, that's what happened, huh? All right. Well, I guess that's why we haven't heard of them in a while. But I thought it was important to understand where the name comes from. The Minutemen, of course, if you're a founding stock American, you might be related to some of these people, but they were the first line of defense against the British. They were a special elite group, I guess you could say, of colonial militiamen during the American Revolutionary War, and mostly in Massachusetts. But they were, you know, they started out just like everyday people, like most militiamen. You know, they're ordinary farmers and tradesmen, townsmen, who formed the militia, as militias are formed today, or at least they should be. They're not, don't have quite the militias that we used to have, like in the 80s
no,
and 90s.
Indeed.
We really should bring that back, and I'm not even kidding. Like, we should bring, like, people got really scared because of, well, all the stuff that's in PACCON, like all that stuff that happened. And I get it, but I think it's going to be necessary to bring some of that back. But, you know, they weren't trained soldiers or anything like that, but they were hunters. They were people that were good with guns, and they pledged to show up in a moment's notice if the British were to show up. And
they were highly organized and effective. Everybody had a much higher baseline skill level back then. And there were no chicks. Look at that. No women.
No chicks. And look, these were men that really literally carved their civilization out of the wilderness. These are the people who didn't just show up to live in a nice little suburban house next to a strip mall like the Indians that are poor. You know, no H-1B1 or H-1B visa militiamen here in the Minutemen. So these were all very, very alpha Chad founding stock Americans. In fact, they were the first people to – they fired the first shot in the Revolutionary War. On April 19th, 1775, at the Battle of Lexington, they were the first to confront the British troops marching in to seize the weapons of the colonists. And they fired the first shot. The shot heard around the world. And so it makes sense why this is the type of imagery that they wanted associated with their group. Sadly, They did not live up.
Yeah.
They did not live up to their mascot. But the Minutemen were, you know, unfortunately, the Minutemen project was made up of a different caliber of man, I guess you could say.
Definitely.
But they started as a group that wanted to watch the southern border. Yeah, here's look at this. We went from these guys here to Fat Boomer with a camo t-shirt.
Yeah.
That says Minuteman Project. You know, Team America. Literally says Team America. Anyway.
Oh, good lord! It's a little on the nose, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was this bottleneck effect that was happening where there was one area in Arizona where like hundreds and hundreds of migrants would pass through daily. So some of the originators of this were trying to protect that part of the border, but they had all these chapters. They had like a chapter, inexplicably, a chapter in Washington. And that's how this one chick that we're going to talk about was referred to the Arizona chapter, but there was no oversight, right?
Yeah, it was pretty decentralized to some extent. But yeah, the context was the immigration obviously has been bad forever. The American people have been, and by the way, even Democrats, there was a time before Democrats were completely, you know, race cucked, where unions, for example, didn't want high immigration because that took away jobs from union workers.
Yes.
And so even the union workers, in fact, Bernie Sanders used to be really against open borders and not so much these days. So you had like a flood of immigrants coming into the country, especially after NAFTA in the 90s and in, this is 2005, so leading up to 2005, you had about a million. That's a lot. A million apprehensions. And that's apprehension. So that's not the people slipping through, because you got to think about it. If they're catching a million, how many are they not catching? How many people are actually slipping through the cracks? And so they had a million per year pretty much all throughout the 90s. And you know this number that you always hear thrown around, like, oh, there's 11 million illegals. They were saying that.
For 25 years.
Right. They were saying that in the 90s while a million a year were coming in during the 90s. And the peak of this was 1.6 million in the year 2000.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's always a metric I didn't care about. I'm like, illegals. I want to know how many not first generation non-whites are in this country.
Right. No, honestly, that's something that people cared about then. They just wouldn't talk about it, unfortunately. That's not how they would frame it. But you were having racial anxiety. You were having people notice the demographics of their area was changing, especially in states like California. And, you know, a lot of that was Reagan giving amnesty to all the illegals in California. So California turned blue overnight.
But they wouldn't touch it from a racial perspective. Everybody just scapegoated the illegal immigrant problem, but made all these caveats about legal immigrants. Like, that's going to make a difference. Like, nobody addressed this in the 90s or early aughts as a racial issue.
Well, people did, but they were not people that got airtime, for sure. People that you wouldn't hear from, because they were, Jews would keep them off TV, basically.
Yeah.
So it was never framed as a racial issue, despite the demographics being fucked in California, Arizona, Texas. And the federal government didn't care, especially, you know, in fact, I would say especially Republicans, because the Chamber of Commerce and all the business interests that funded a lot of these Republican candidates wanted the cheap labor. Like with Trump now, with the hotel H-1Bs. Workers and the, yeah, and not even just the Indians, but like the hotel workers, farm workers, you know, one of the big reasons why Trump just doesn't care about white people, but one of the reasons why he'll never do the mass deportations like people were envisioning is because all of his buddies, they hire illegals.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
They hire illegal. And so this is something that's been going on since forever. And so this was going on all throughout the 90s. You also had this was an excuse that was used But post 9/11, because they talked about how, oh, you know, terrorists. And I noticed this after 9/11 on Fox News, a lot of these immigration hawks would suddenly start trying to use 9/11 as an excuse to close the border. Well, we have to close the border because we don't know when Habib with a bomb strapped to his ass is going to come sneaking across.
Yeah.
And they still kind of do that. You still kind of hear that rhetoric. Like, I remember during the first Trump administration, that was a big talking point that even I think Stephen Miller and people like that would say, like, oh, well, we never know when someone from Iran is going to come and kill all the Jews or something like that was going to piss us off.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was doing research for the show, I heard a lot of people say, NMA, the NMAs, the non-Mexican aliens. And they were talking about how worried they are about, like, Polish migrants. I'm like, shut up. Nobody cares about that. And everything's under the guise of Al-Qaeda. What if Al-Qaeda comes through our southern border? It's like, no, we're worried about brown people. I don't care if they're from Argentina or Brazil or Guatemala or Mexico. Like, no. But people wouldn't touch it during this era. Even some of these Minutemen, most of the Minutemen.
Well, and you got to remember, Bush, especially, his brother, Jeb, is married to a Mexican.
Oh, that's right. A tiny, fat, really weird-looking Mexican.
Right. As they often...
She's so weird.
They often turn into after, crazy. After like, yeah. 29, every Mexican turns weird and fat and short. So, yeah, this was something that was ongoing. They tried to use the 9/11 excuse. Wages were being suppressed because, I mean, obviously, if a farmer can hire 50 people at $2 an hour, they're going to do that instead of hiring a couple white guys and trying to streamline their operation or I don't know, work on their own fucking farm, you know, like farmers used to.
Yeah.
So all the low-skilled sectors really suffered. You also had the public schools were overrun. I mean, this was something I experienced. I went to public school in California when I was a kid. And it was like, you know, like our teacher spent more time with the brown kids that spoke 7 different languages trying to catch them up to speed. Like, we didn't do anything. Like, the white kids just sat around fucking being bored all day because, you know, Lupe over there couldn't fucking pay attention. And, you know, it was fucking ridiculous. So you had all kinds of issues with the welfare system being strained because, of course, especially in states like California, these illegals were getting welfare. The hospitals, because the illegals, obviously, they don't have any kind of health care program with their employers. They just show up when they accidentally saw their arm off or whatever or shoot each other. And so you have, like, the emergency rooms. And then they don't pay their bill. Because they don't have any kind of ID, and they just leave, and that just means your insurance goes up because your insurance is paying for all these fucking illegals.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. My dad was head of ER in Albuquerque, at Albuquerque Hospital, and the stories he would come home with about Mexicans injuring themselves. it's just astonishing. And so much drunk driving, like just an incredible amount of drunk
driving. Especially in Albuquerque. Yeah, DWI was through the roof out there. Juan was juggling nail guns and while drinking Michelob and ended up in the hospital.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, there was a whole lot of that going on. And then people, again, this is, I think, one of these. I mean, it's a real issue, but I think it's one of these stupid things where conservatives think they can connect with the left by saying, and it's bad for the environment.
Yeah.
You know, like, look, they leave trash in the desert and it's bad. And like liberals don't really fucking give a shit about the environment if it means that it promotes white genocide. I mean, they would literally go around pouring antifreeze directly into a river if it meant that white people would die, you know. So that didn't really help out. And so you had these kinds of excuses going on. Sometimes they would talk, and I've done streams about this, where they would talk about the language. Like, you had this as, like, I remember, like, Bill O'Reilly saying stuff like, well, they just need to learn English. I'm tired of pressing one to get English when I use the ATM and whatever. Like, that was the big issue, you know?
Or like I don't have a problem with Mexicans. It's that people aren't learning the culture. It's like, they're Mexican. What do you, they're not going to learn the culture. They're not going to become American.
Right. And that was the big issue, was people not understanding that culture is a product of biology. Mm-hmm. That they don't, it's not these, we're not like these identical computers with different operating systems running, and all you have to do is, well, just wipe the hard drive and install Windows 2000 on this Mexican, and he'll be fine. It's like, no, that's not how it works. Like, their culture is radically different because their biology, the source of that culture is radically different. You know, like, yes, cultures weren't just, you know, God didn't just run around the world throwing cultures down from the sky, and then we got lucky and got the good one. You know, yeah, like, these cultures came from us. They came from our DNA, and it's tied inseparably to our DNA. And right, this is something that we need to talk about more, and this is something that they didn't talk about at all in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So Bush was also at the time talking about possibly doing some amnesty, you know, doing guest worker programs. So, like, the Republicans have been fucking over white people on this issue since forever. In fact, I don't think they've ever done anything significant, or even really, not, I would say, that definitively different than what Democrats have done over since 1965. Like, right, in terms of actually trying to control. I mean, they talk about it, but they haven't really made any headway whatsoever.
Well, so, they all care about getting rich and about ruthless capitalism, which is absent racial ideology, which is why we see the same shit from both of them.
Right, right. And I think that, and there's even today, it's taken on kind of a libertarian, I guess, hue, but that's the same thing. Libertarianism is, I mean, that's almost like Endgame. It's just capitalism. It's extreme capitalism. It's in fact, if you really look at libertarianism, a true libertarian would be for open borders. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Because the assumption of libertarianism is that people operate with equal information. And if you're a stupid Mexican, then you're inherently at a disadvantage. So that can't possibly be true. It's another philosophy totally absent a racial hierarchy or any kind of racial understanding.
Yeah, in many ways, it suffers the same fatal flaws that communism does. The assumption that all humans are exactly the same, and so we're just little machines that if you tweak one little variable, just like changing a line of code, the program will reliably behave the way you expect, instead of realizing that we're dealing with biological entities that are quite frankly different species.
Of course.
You know, I mean, bottom line. Yeah. So that's the environment here. Here, I'm going to play a short clip. This is not in the script, but this is a short clip of, I believe, a CNN story talking about the Minutemen Project, and you'll see the one of the founders, Chris Simcox, talking about it.
Based in the legendary town of Tombstone, organizers expect as many as 1,500 volunteers. Stationed at intervals along 50 miles of the Mexico-Arizona border, they will attempt to detect and report anyone crossing illegally.
We're a neighborhood watch group. Nothing more than a neighborhood watch group who are doing nothing but what the president and the Department of Homeland Security ask Americans to do.
And by that he means he's referencing the see something, say something that I believe Janet Napolitano really hammered during the Obama administration. But if you see something, say something. So that essentially was what they were doing, is they were just like a neighborhood watch. They would go to the border, and if they saw illegals coming across through the desert, they'd get on their radios and contact Border Patrol and tell on them. Basically, they would just tell, and then hopefully Border Patrol would do something. My understanding is at first, in fact, Border Patrol actually didn't mind and kind of appreciated it, and would respond often, and they did actually have a little bit of success. This is the other founder here, Jim
Gilchrist.
I think it's they always say Gilchrist in the when they're doing the reports, but he is, this is him at the press club, and he'll kind of give you an intro as to how the group came about.
I'm James Gilchrist. I founded the Minuteman Project on October 1st last year, with two specific goals in mind. Number one, to bring national awareness to the illegal alien invasion crisis, the open borders leaving us susceptible to terrorism. Secondly, was to to show, to prove up that physical presence on our borders, on our ports, both northern and southern borders as well, would effectively seal those borders from illicit activity, including drug importation, which counts to multi-billions of dollars of transactions leaving our country every year. And those drugs end up being solicited to, in my case, a 16-year-old nephew who's now addicted to drugs, has been in jail twice, doesn't have much of a life to look forward to. He was introduced to drugs in mid-school, grammar school, pre-high school. It's one of millions. We've been successful in both those. We proved that in, not only in 30 days, which we budgeted for this this program, we proved in 10 days we could effectively seal a 23-mile stretch of border with various numbers of volunteers ranging from 80 to 120 at any given time out of our inventory of 1,022. The illegal alien invasion dropped, the apprehensions dropped from, dropped by almost 70 to 90%. It varies. At one point during the month, there was a 90% drop. Effectively, as of the first 20 days of the operation, we succeeded in stopping at least 70% of this illegal activity.
And what's the one thing you notice he didn't mention?
Race.
There you go. He didn't mention anything about that being a factor.
He had to talk about his nephew, too. You know his nephew's sitting at home like, God damn it, Uncle Jim, shut up. Stop outing me.
Yeah.
He probably just likes to smoke weed. You know.
Exactly. No, but the other thing is, too, first of all, it did have an impact, but I think the reason it had an impact was the leftist rhetoric about, like, oh, there's a bunch of white guys that are going to fucking shoot you if you cross the border. Like, in a way, it kind of helped because, like, Mexicans were like, fuck, like, there's a bunch of gringos out there. They're going to fucking shoot us if we cross the border.
Yeah.
So I think that actually worked. I mean, I worked with when this was going on, I worked with Mexicans in the media, and they were afraid. They were afraid that they actually believed that there was a bunch of hillbillies out in the desert that were going to start just busted caps in Mexicans, and I thought was awesome. But you know, this is a shorter clip. This is from Simcox, who was the other founder of the group.
I am Chris Simcox. I'm the publisher editor of the Tombstone Tumbleweed newspaper in Tombstone, Arizona, and the founder of Civil Homeland Defense, a local neighborhood watch, border watch effort that began in November of 2002. After discovering that Cochise County, Arizona, was pretty much ground zero for the flood of illegals and drugs coming into the country, and the numbers proved that. Last year in Cochise County, Border Patrol apprehended 239,000 people and tens of thousands of pounds of drugs, including marijuana and methamphetamine, which is a growing problem coming across the border, as well as cocaine, heroin, and now we find some weapons, illegal weapons transactions going on. Most of the weapons coming from the United States into Mexico.
Well, you know, I guess Operation Fast and Furious, possibly.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of that was actually the ATF sending those weapons to Mexico. But anyway, so again, no mention of race, talking about how, you know, it's guns, it's drugs, and look, these are all valid points, but the thing is, those are all tied to race. You know, these are all symptoms.
Right. And you know that there was some kind of focus group discussion before he goes on C-SPAN. Like, okay, well, we can't talk about race. We can talk about, like, the effects of race, if these guys were even racially aware. And honestly, through my research, I didn't see any evidence that they were.
I don't think they were necessarily, or at least if they were, they were very limp-wristed about it. But there were certainly some that were. But, you know, alternatively, as we mentioned, like the leftists, you know, they didn't mind talking about race. This is a clip from a video put up at the ACLU. Of course, Jews instantly, as soon as this, because it was working, right? It was actually preventing illegals from coming across the border because they thought they were going to get sniped from, you know, 1,000 yards off with a Desert Eagle or something, you know. And they're like, okay, well, we're gonna just not go across the border anymore because I guess there's, you know, the Dukes of Hazzard out there are going to fucking gun us down. So the ACLU put out this video and they, of course, immediately address race.
Whatever it takes to stop the flow of people coming across the border right now has to be done for the survival of America.
We need to get them removed because they're taking over our community as strangers from Mexico and wherever else they come from.
These fucking gringos won't let me just invade their country and rape their women. They are doing a racism.
I think the American people are going to get fed up enough that they're going to begin taking vigilante style the law into their own hands.
This particular group has defined immigrants as enemies.
I just want stupid gringos to pay me to get fat and pop out 13 kids. Holy shit, I hate white people.
If you have an issue with immigration policy, it should be settled in a different manner, but not taking arms and going to the border.
Ah, yes, the Catholic Church involved, of course. But, yeah. So they put out this video where they immediately try to frame it as a race issue, which it was.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Is yep. When you lie about what your position is, then you are always on the defense because you're always trying to protect the lie. And your opponent knows you're lying. And so do you, right? So it's easy to make you uncomfortable and get defensive and try to, like, you know, dance around. And we've all seen, look, we've all grown up watching debates with leftists and, you know, some conservative, cuckservative on some news show trying to, you know, so no, it's not about race, or it's not, when it clearly is.
Right. And it puts you immediately in a defensive position. And once you get there, once you start defending yourself, you're totally screwed. There's no way out of that. If they would have just been like, this is a racial thing, and then they would get called racist, and then there would be a discussion about why Mexicans can't be in this country. What's wrong with them? Everybody was just too afraid of being called racist. I think things are different now. We got a better shot.
And they got called racist anyway.
Yeah. So what's the point?
Yeah. What's the point? I would rather be called a racist and just say, you know, and be like the yes meme and just be like, yes, I am racist. And that's more defensible than trying to be like, because here's the thing. The second you start saying, well, no, what about like all these economic problems? First of all, economics is not sexy. No one really fucking cares about that shit. And the second you say that, it's real easy for a leftist to try to come up with like some kind of economic reason why actually immigration's good because it makes rich people richer or whatever. But they dress it up, you know, to look like something else. But they can make the argument that it's good for the economy, right? They can, which, you know, you could make the argument that having a never ending flow of consumers coming flooding into an economy would somehow make rich people richer, and therefore the stock prices go up, and you know, so
it's much harder to make an argument against Mexican crime and low IQ and cultural differences because of race. I mean, those are difficult issues for the left to attack.
Well, right, and the thing is, that is the issue. And in fact, here's the thing: if those differences didn't exist, we wouldn't have a problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the whole point. Like the whole reason why it's not an aesthetic thing. I mean, don't get me wrong; I think white people are better looking across the board, but that's not the reason that I want to live in a white country. I mean, it's maybe like on the list, but it's pretty low, right? And so it's like the actual reason is that they are not us, and there are measurable differences. IQ just being one of the things, and the only reason why people bring up IQ is that it is something you can measure. Our minds are different in many other ways, but IQ is like a number you can point at that's, you know, pretty consistent there.
That's a good point. I mean, the fact that we're having social problems and economic and cultural problems is evidence that we're different. I mean, they would just be able to seamlessly move within our society and nothing really would have changed if they weren't fundamentally different.
Right. No, there'd be no issue at all. In fact, I mean, if you look at historically, what whites have done across the world, not just in North America, but including North America. When they first came to North America, the colonists essentially tried to convert the natives to Christianity and make them a part of the community. And then it spectacularly backfired every time. And the English Empire, the British Empire, same thing. Everywhere they would set up shop, they would attempt to interface with the locals in a way that, had they been up to the same level, that would have been a fairly seamless operation. But at the same time, the whole reason why the British Empire was able to expand is because these people weren't at the same level. Like, if they'd been at the same level, you wouldn't be able to just be like, okay, well, we own you now. we're so advanced that we can just, with one boat, come in here and just own your entire country. Because there's that much of a technological gap and an IQ gap. So, I mean, it's absurd that we don't talk about this as the reason why we don't want immigration. And again, it's not just IQ, because if it was just IQ, then we'd want all the Chinese people in the world that we could get into the country to move here.
Yeah, of course.
And we don't want that either, because that's just one metric. And the other things are just, we don't have, we have some other metrics, but like, we don't have the ability to really measure accurately yet. We will, especially with AI, the differences in our brains and how that affects outcomes. But anyway, so that's the basic idea. You had a bunch of people that were sitting on the border and basically babysitting it and calling into the Border Patrol when they saw someone, and not talking about race, even though the leftists were 100% aware of the race issue. Now, here's an example of what they were doing. This is some footage of Chris Simcox actually stopping the group that was crossing the border.
This guy yesterday.
I told you.
I mean, here.
Yo, man. Vigilantes get you, man.
I win again. I told you, go somewhere else. Don't come here.
Well, another night on the border.
A large group, a gringo. I guess.
Don't be shy, guys. You'll be on my newspaper this week.
So. They
were polite. It would be so much cooler if he was just shooting them on sight.
Yeah, if you're just like throwing them on the ground and, you know, execution style.
Yeah. Come on, where's some of that? This was so unsatisfying, this research. Right. There was none of that.
Not well, there was a tiny bit of that, but we'll get on in a second. But so that's what they were doing. And of course, here's a ACLU Jew who swoops in to say, that's actually false imprisonment, what he's doing. Even though these people are illegally, you know, invading our country, and all he's doing is saying, stop. And he's not making them stop. They're just doing it because they don't know what the fuck's going on. Well, actually, it's because the lesser races are aware that when a white man tells them what to do, there's just something in them that makes them want to obey. So they just, you know, they submit to the white man as is proper. And but this is what the Jew has to say about all this.
Individual, private citizen, if they go up to you and say, stop, you can't move, you know, that's an arrest. And whether it's, you know, if it's by pointing a gun, obviously, but even if it's not pointing a gun, if they stop you and say, we're not going to let you leave, that's an arrest. That's an imprisonment. And there are torts for that, and they can be criminally prosecuted.
Let Jews go to law school. God.
Yeah. Well, without Jews, there would be no law schools. You know?
That's true.
But yeah. Anyway, so this is the kind of thing you had going on. You had, it wasn't just the end of or ACLU. You had every Jew group imaginable spinning up their gears and to attack what they were doing and trying to. In fact, they sent in like legal observers, which was funny because it just made it harder for the Mexicans to get in, because now they saw even more people walking around with walkie-talkies, so they couldn't tell the difference. You know, they just see a bunch of guys with walkie-talkies, and they're
Dios
like, fuck.
Dios mío!
Yeah. Oh, no.
Gringo.
Andale! And so they ran away and And but yeah, so but they had these people that would with cameras that would try to catch the Minutemen doing something illegal and whatnot. But yeah, they again never about race. The left knew it was about race. This guy knew it was about race.
People who support the militarization of the border tend to take the nationalist argument that they're just protecting their country, protecting it from anybody who could be coming across. But when you sit down and talk to them a little bit more and you try to analyze where their sentiments are coming from, you start seeing a little bit more rhetoric towards people from the South. And when you start picking away at the surface, you get at the deeper core issue, which is the problem of the attitude towards people who are perceived to be different from themselves.
Wow, the top 1% of Mexicans correctly identifies the issue, although even he barely mentioned race. People that are different from this, we're talking about Browns. Come on, buddy.
Right, and it's funny because he said the perceived to be different. It's like, no, those perceptions are accurate.
Yeah.
You know, like we perceive the color blue when things are blue, and we perceive that Mexicans are different because they're different, you know. And so, yeah, it's not just like, it's not a delusion, it's a perception. And there's usually a source for those perceptions. Although, again, here's the sign on the screen here. Illegals destroyed my beautiful desert. It's like, go get a fucking trash bag then. Like, if that's your big problem with Mexicans coming here, go start picking up trash, you fucking hag. Like, that would have been so much easier than patrolling the border. You know, like, you could clean up the desert in a weekend and you're done.
Yeah.
You know, like, absolutely. Give me a fucking break. So, but these guys would bend over backwards to avoid sounding like they were racist. Now, here's another guy here.
Securing the border, in my opinion, is one of the ways to secure the American way. And that's why I'll back up Ranch Rescue, Civil Homeland Defense, and American Border Patrol. I believe in the American way, and I believe in the American people. I don't want all the lives of the people who fought for this great country to go down the tubes.
What does an American person mean to you? Who are the American people?
The American people are the people who speak English.
Wrong!
Say it.
Wrong! Wrong!
Learn our culture.
Wrong!
No.
Wrong!
Our background, and so on.
And so on? No!
Dude, yeah. what a bitch.
Yeah. So unfortunately, that was the issue, is they would, because here's the thing, Mexicans can, you know, or at least arguably do, to, you know, to the satisfaction of this guy probably, do all those things. You know,
yeah.
A Mexican could learn English. A Mexican can start shopping at the mall and getting Starbucks and watching, whatever the popular, The Bachelor, whatever it was on in 2005, right? A Mexican, in fact, the guy he's talking to right now, he probably considers an American, you know, because he's speaking English. He's got his hat on backwards and, you know, he's wearing a polo shirt or whatever. He's American, you know, and so that's always
the issue. He's not asking himself the question, who established the American way? What is the American way? Why is it like this? And it's because of white people. It's so frustrating. I hope this guy's dead now.
Well, he probably is now. I mean, unless he's like 100. So yeah, they would do anything to avoid being called racist. And the big thing, here's the funny thing. I used to think it was a dog whistle, but when they would say culture instead of race, but I don't think so. I think that they really convinced themselves, like I was saying with the operating system thing, I think they really convinced themselves that it was, that there was this magic thing called culture that was like a human a software that you could install on literally a pygmy or a Mexican or an Eskimo, and they would overnight become like just some normal white guy. And it's funny because this guy, you couldn't have found a more boomer way of expressing that than this guy right here.
Some people try to equate me with the biological racism. I'm a cultural racist. I believe people have to take cultural responsibility. By culture, I mean pattern perception or symbolic interpretation. And we have a different symbolic interpretation of our symbols and our logic on this side of the border than they have on their side of the border.
That's so retarded. If you have a genetic argument for racial hierarchy, then you don't have to do any of this shit. You don't have to act like this. You don't have to say any of this. You don't have to make up terms like cultural racist. It's like, good Lord, why are all the frontmen for this such nerds?
Well, and the thing is, this guy, he understands that the minds of white people are different, mm-hmm. and that we do interpret data differently. And in fact,
this guy knows. Yeah, you don't think he knows.
He gets it, but like at the same time, he won't just say it. He won't just say, look, white people, the reason why our country is the way it is, the way that we interact with each other, the way that we do, is that we're white. He's trying to make it sound like, again, this is like a software issue. It's not a hardware issue. And so it's easily solved. And so, you know, if we could just take the time to, you know, send out the IT guys and install all the updates onto the Mexicans, you know,
then they'll be reprogram all of these spics. Yeah.
Just uninstall the Mexican malware and they'll be compatible with America 5.0. And it'll be great. And because that's what he's saying. He's literally saying one of the issues. And this is something I used to hear actually a lot from people like him, is they would say things like, well, because again, they understood the problem, but they couldn't connect like the last dot. And they would say things like,
I think they could. They just refused to.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it was probably like the civil rights movement programming, like overriding, you know, getting in the way, like they couldn't, yeah, you know, they just wouldn't do it. But they would say things like, you know, well, one of the reasons why they have to learn English is if you translate the, you know, like the founding documents into Spanish, it won't sound exactly the same. And so like, it won't, you know, the same images won't pop. And it's like, no, it's just, if a white person reads something that another white person wrote, it's going to hit different than if a white person reads something a Japanese guy wrote, or a Mexican reads something that a white guy wrote. Like, we have different brains, and our ability to relate to those brains is limited to experience. And you'll never know. I mean, one of the things that black people say all the time that actually is true is like, you'll never know what it's like to be black. And it's like, thank fucking God. Right.
Yeah. But they're not. Right. That is a fact.
Yeah.
And I have no sympathy for these boomers either, because what were they going to lose by being called racist? You couldn't dox somebody in like 1996. You wouldn't ruin their internet credibility. It's not like everybody would find out within 5 seconds that you were racist. It was a different world back then. There wasn't the widespread information that's here now. Like, oh no, you're going to lose your job in like telecoms or whatever. Buck up.
They still said nigger on TV in the 90s.
Yeah.
Regularly. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Like, it wasn't like some, you know, it certainly wasn't a word that would make you, your whole life is over because you said nigger in public. Like, you could say nigger in public and, like, nothing would happen to you. You might get some dirty looks, or if you're in a black neighborhood, you might hope that you've got a concealed carry. But, you know, that was about it, you know. So, they really had, it was low risk. They had nothing to risk except for, I think what it is it was like a self-image kind of a thing, right? Yeah. Like they had so fully embraced this, like, we are the age of Aquarius, you know, we're the new, you know, post-racism generation that, you know, that we are above all that. And that, and all these naughty racial thoughts I'm having in my head, it's just this residue that you know, hopefully my children don't have to deal with, you know.
That's so much worse than responding to the whims of social pressure, which we need a degree of that in society, or we're never going to be able to get women under control. And when we take back power, not everybody's going to be racist if we don't have all these sheep falling into line. Like, that's a real pressure. But, like, you feel bad about yourself. You feel like a bad man. What a pussy.
Right. No, and these people should be shamed and mocked. And, you know, and look, some of these people, and once you find out what some of their backstory, they should be more than that. But yeah, so that was the issue with the race disconnect, and why they would never, ever, ever really put it together. But now some groups, they were, I guess you could say, a little more racially aware. But they
was
were
it Jews.
Well, not Jews. I'm talking about the other factions of the.
Oh, I thought we had some SPLC clip. Never mind.
No, or wait, do we? No, we don't.
I I see. Wait. SPLC fag bitching about.
Oh,
Nazis.
I do. Wait, I do. You're right. Here's the SPLC fag.
Well, from the time that the Minuteman Project was announced late last year, the Southern Poverty Law Center's intelligence project began tracking the efforts of white power, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, and other what we label hate groups to openly recruit their members to join the Minuteman Project. The second group of men that I walked by who were sitting in lawn chairs at the protest rally, who called me over and said, hey, we're National Alliance. You know, are you National Alliance? Are you white power? What are you doing here? You know, and they very quickly confided in me the fact that they had assault rifles in the back of their SUV and that they were trying to organize a white power patrol group. They were all viewing the Minuteman Project as very fertile recruiting ground. As one member of the Aryan Nations put it, most of the people there at the Minuteman Project, if they're not already members of a hate group, they're half awake, and we can bring them to full awakeness.
We are on the front lines of freedom right now. Our very republic is teetering on the edge. The future for our posterity is in jeopardy now. We must secure our American borders now.
All right. Yeah.
You might like what this fat loser has to say. But well, this guy was a disaster.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Absolutely. This is JT Reddy. And he was part of this faction vigilante group called the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. This was like part of their splintering. So I think it was like an offshoot of the original group, not one that kind of developed in tandem. But he lost his mind. He was already insane. He had like a bunch of priors. He couldn't hold a job. I think he got dishonorably discharged, or he was in like military court for theft. Like, so it was some bad shit. Anyway, he goes and he kills his girlfriend.
Before you rip that Band-Aid off. Well, now that cat's out of the bag, this next clip will sound a little different.
It gets
different,
much worse than that, actually.
Oh, yes, it does. You just opened it a little. You cracked the door open a little bit. But I'll tell you what, despite that little fun fact, and it gets worse, it does. He did run for sheriff, and he was, if you listen to him at least some of the recordings I was able to find, it's funny because he actually sounds kind of smart. He kind of sounds relatable. He sounds put together. He's talking about America first. Oh, wait, I thought some gay Mexican came up with that. people keep telling me he came up with that, but that's weird. This guy was talking about it in 2005. So here's a little clip of him sounding a lot like a fellow white nationalist, I would say, today. This is an interview, I believe this is during his campaign, because he ran for a couple things. This might have been when he was running for sheriff. And he's being asked about his involvement with the border groups.
I mean, why are you so ardently against illegal immigration or immigration, period?
Well, and that's the key thing, is we're always put into the we're against, we're anti-immigration, or we're against something. Actually, I'm actually for America. I'm for sovereignty, and I'm for our rich European-American culture, which we have here, which has made this nation great. And so what I would say is, why are they against European-Americans? Why are they against the rich fabric that we have woven here in America from our founding fathers? Why do they want to invade our country and our land? That would be the question that I would have. And so I would see them as anti-American, and I'm simply an American who's here defending our nation, our culture, and our country.
Is that the whole concept behind America First?
America First, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Well, America First is a natural thing. You should be for America First. If you're from Mexico and you had Mexico First, or Guatemala First, if you're from Guatemala, that makes perfect sense. What doesn't make sense is for people to come here from somewhere else and demand that their language, a foreign language, be spoken and written and printed up on the taxpayers' dime, that their flags are are flown and not assimilate into our culture. Now that's what's foreign and unnatural and alien to what we should be looking out for here in the United States of America. And I would expect any country. I wouldn't go to Pakistan and go out there and burn their flags. I don't think I would probably live too long if I did, but I wouldn't demand that the 4th of July be celebrated in Mexico and demand taxpayer benefits of Mexico. And in fact, they have laws that prevent people from owning land close to the shore in Mexico if you're a foreigner. So every culture must protect itself, protect its borders, otherwise it ceases to exist. And if we want to continue on the path that we're going and cease to exist as a nation and see the rest of Western civilization collapse on top of us with that, as we see in Europe already, in England and Germany and other places, then it's already written in stone. But I think we have enough good patriots that are standing up and opposing that. We've also seen these tea parties. I mean, that's a great eruption of patriotism if I've ever seen it.
Oh, you optimistic faggot.
I can't believe I blew the reveal on this one.
Oh, yeah.
What a bummer.
Yeah.
A bummer.
Well, this guy, yeah, look, he said a lot more. This guy really was race-pilled for sure, but this was in a public interview. Obviously, he's not bringing it up. But again, I think that was a mistake. I think that's a bad strategy. Are you going to get elected? No, but he wasn't going to get elected anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well just not lie and might as well normalize it. It's like when people, you shouldn't be optics cucking when your survival is on the line. Bottom line is when you literally are facing extinction and you're worried, well, how is this going to look? Fuck you.
Who cares?
You're a fucking bitch. And in fact, you want those extremists. You want the people pushing it so far and being obscene about it and crashing those taboos. So that a normal mom and pop talking in the barbershop or whatever doesn't, like, they don't feel so worried about, like, oh, is it too rude to say nigger in public? It's like, no, not anymore, because there's some guy running around yelling, what's up, niggers, to everybody and shooting black guys in front of courthouses and whatnot. Like, you got
to
have.
This is why we need to support Chud. I hate that people are like, oh, well, he was doing something stupid. Irrelevant. Yep. He's changing things for average people, and I hate it when people say widening the Overton window, because it's so cliche and trite, but that is what he's doing.
Yeah, tribe up. You know, you got to be on the side of your fellow whites, especially those who are, look, you don't have to sit there and send them money, you don't even have to retweet him, but when there's people actively counter-signaling him, you're an enemy of the white race. You are. Anyone that's doing that is an enemy of the white race. And if you're going out of your way to not support people like that, you're an enemy of the white race. You're a cancer, and you will be eradicated. Or else we can't survive. And I'm sorry, I think white people are going to survive. So you'll be on the operating room floor when we're done. But anyway, as you kind of alluded to, unfortunately.
You mean stated explicitly on accident?
Like this happened here.
Meanwhile, the death of a border vigilante has nothing to do with his controversial activities. At least that's the tentative word right now from police in Gilbert. They say militia organizer and former neo-Nazi J.T. Reddy killed 4 people, then himself, in a burst of domestic violence. One of those killed a little girl between the ages of 1 and 2. Reddy had a reputation as one of the most aggressive forces in the immigration debate. Not on your side, Craig Smith joins us from the newsroom now with more on J.T. Reddy. Craig, what have you been able to find out?
Jennifer, J.T. Reddy was an extreme and controversial figure in an issue full of extreme and controversial figures. Some of his allies have suggested his activities led a cartel hit squad to take him out. But Gilbert police say everything points to a domestic dispute that led him to turn to part of his extensive collection of guns.
Now, there are people, in fact, there still are people, that think that he didn't actually kill his entire family and then himself, but that the cartel made it look like that, or that the FBI killed him because he was being actively investigated by the FBI, and there's a lot of conspiracy theories. But I found the audio of the 911 call that the daughter of his girlfriend made moments after the shooting, and this is what it sounds like.
Yo, Where's your emergency?
530 West Tumbleweed Road, Gilbert, Arizona 85233.
530 West Tumbleweed and Gilbert, what's going on there?
There was gunshots, and my mom and my niece and my sister are all on the floor, and I think they're dead.
Okay, tell me, what about your mom?
It was my mom's boyfriend, JT Reddy. They were fighting, they were screaming. I was in my room, and now they're all dead.
Okay, where did you hear the gunshot?
I heard it coming from outside. The front door is open, they're all lying on the floor, there's blood.
Okay, well, who has been shot? Do you know?
My mom, Lisa Medeiros. My sister,
your mom,
Amber Medeiros.
Your mom's been shot?
My mom, my sister, and my niece. Please,
your
hurry.
Mom, your sister, and your niece have all been shot?
Yes.
Okay, we've had officers on the way.
So she positively identifies him as the shooter. And I looked at the case, the other evidence available. It's pretty clear that he was really into guns and got in a huge fight with his girlfriend, shot her, and then freaked out and shot everybody else and shot himself. Mm-hmm. So,
including a 15-month-old.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Awful. Medeiros, were they white?
That would have been funny if his girlfriend was Mexican. That would have been.
Lynn Medeiros, Amber Nieve Medeiros.
That doesn't sound white. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know how I didn't catch this before the show, but.
Oh man! Oh, look, can you Google pick it? See if there's picture of her.
I'm looking. If I find it, I will let you know.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. There's also, sorry guys, that you know that guy, Tim Simcox, or was it? Is it Tim? Is that his first name? Jim? Or no, Chris. Chris Simcox. Sorry, I'm all over the place. Chris Simcox, the guy who started the Minutemen. Well.
C15 newsroom at this hour. A man well known in the Valley and the state for his views on immigration and border security is now accused of molesting young girls. 52-year-old Chris Simcox accused of sexually attacking three girls all under the age of 10. Simcox is the co-founder of the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps and was a one-time candidate for the U.S. Senate. His Minutemen movement brought thousands of anti-illegal immigration activists to patrol the U.S.-Mexico border. Prior to starting the Minutemen, Simcox taught kindergarten in California for more than a decade. This is not the first time he's been accused of molestation. Simcox's first wife claimed he tried to molest their daughter. We'll keep you updated on
this. Jeez! Good grief. Wait, before we move on, it looks like the girlfriend was white and the niece does not look white.
Well, some of those Hispanics look pretty close. It depends on.
No, that's,
she looks white, white.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I thought maybe this guy got railroaded because this is a lot of stories about people in the Minutemen that got, you know, that got in some trouble. But there was a lot of evidence that he, it sounds like maybe, like totally raped a 5-year-old girl.
Yeah, and ongoing activity like that for years, maybe when he was a school teacher as well. You know, his wife said that he was up to stuff like that. His own daughters testified against him. So, I mean, yeah, another one of those cases where people are like, oh, it's the FBI set him up. Look, that would be my first possibility, too. I'd be like, yeah, that's possible. But then you look into it, you're like, no.
Yeah,
and this is really goes down to the problem with leadership in a lot of these organizations. And this is why you have to be hard on leaders. And this is why you do have to accuracy spiral, as I've coined the term, when it comes to knowing what kind of people that your leaders are. This is why when you start to notice things, and I mean everyone, even people like Trump, when you start ignoring little things about a potential leader and thinking, well, that won't really matter. Even there's all these red flags, but I want to win this election so bad that I'm going to ignore all these red flags, or I'm so happy because, well, at least he's doing something. At least he's on the news. You know, Fox News is interviewing Chris Simcox. He's bringing, you know, raising awareness about the border. It's like, yeah, but he's a pedo. You know, and
right,
it's like,
right. So and then the higher they're able to rise in the hierarchy or gain power or momentum, the bigger the fall will be when these things are inevitably discovered. And then it hurts the credibility of the entire cause. Like, we have to be discerning. We have to.
Right. No, and we have to. This is why you have to make sure that the people that want to be in positions of power, whether you're talking about a politician or just any kind of leader of men, you need to make sure these are people that are there for the right reasons. And oftentimes they're not, because those are not usually the kinds of qualities that you want in a leader are usually not the kinds of qualities that people who seek leadership roles have. And so inevitably you get kind of scumbag people that get into leadership roles, and it doesn't end here. Like, it's not just the neo-Nazi guy that killed his family, or the other creep that was molesting his daughter and her friends, but there's another person as well. Do you want to talk about her a little bit? I got a news report. I'll tell you what, I'll play the news report about her being arrested. And then if you'd like to fill people in on the... Did you finish watching that thing on her?
Okay.
I'll let you cover that then. So here's the news report on another member of the Minutemen.
A major break in the double murder of a father and his 9-year-old daughter shot and killed in a home invasion last month. 3 people have been arrested now, and one of the suspects is the national head of the Minutemen American Defense. Shauna Ford, charged with first-degree murder, and according to investigators, is the mastermind of the brutal crime. Her alleged cohorts, Albert Gaxiola and Jason Bush, all 3, reportedly barged into an Arivaca home intending to steal cash and drugs. And inside, 9-year-old Brisenia Flores shot and killed her father, Raul, also shot dead. The sole survivor, Brisenia's mother, who was shot, she survived, and she managed to return fire during the incident, hitting one of the suspects.
Suspects Shauna Ford and Albert Gaxiola both appeared in video court a short while ago. Ford was arrested today about 15 miles southeast of Sierra Vista. Gaxiola was arrested late this afternoon near Park and Benson Highway. Both of them taken into custody without incident. Bond for the 2 suspects set at $1 million. The 3rd suspect, Jason Bush, shown in this mugshot, was arrested yesterday in Kingman, Arizona. He's being treated at a Kingman hospital for a gunshot he received during the murders when the sole survivor fired back. Now, sheriff's officials again say this is one of the most despicable cases they've ever dealt with.
Albert, did you do it?
No.
What do you think about that 9-year-old guy?
I think that's a tragedy.
I like how one of them was a Mexican.
Stop. Watch out. You didn't tell me what I was under arrest for.
What do you think you're under arrest for?
Did you do it?
No, I did not do it. I have nothing to do with it.
Murder suspects Shauna Ford and Albert Gaxiola both pleading their innocence in the shooting deaths of 9-year-old Brisenia Flores and her father, Raul Flores. A 3rd suspect, Jason Bush, was arrested in Kingman.
Jason Bush was, in fact, the shooter of all 3 of these people, under orders from Ms. Ford.
The motive? Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik.
The husband who was murdered has a history of being involved in narcotics, and there was an anticipation that there would be a considerable amount of cash at this location, as well as the possibility of drugs.
Okay, well, that's kind of true, but this woman was like a standard BPD chick. She had all these changes in identity over her whole life. She was just like a really bizarre lady, and she was from Everett, Washington, but like found a way to Arizona to be a part of this group, and then made some kind of offshoot group that she was the leader of called the Minutemen American Defense. So what happened here is that she had massive delusions of grandeur where she was thinking that she could single-handedly take out the cartel. And so she planned with this Mexican guy, inexplicably, and this other white guy, to find these drug smugglers who they thought were drug smugglers. And the guy that they busted in on might have been like a low-level drug smuggler.
I think he was.
He probably
was. So fuck him.
But they didn't find any money or any drugs.
Well, my understanding is he didn't have the money or drugs at his house, but he had money and drugs, just not he kept it out of his house in case he was ever raided by cops or whatever.
He probably was, but he wasn't like a drug kingpin. So their plan was to like find these drug smugglers, to steal the drugs or the money, and then to sell the drugs and use that the money to fund the Minutemen. But something went wrong here, and this guy, her accomplice, goes in, and like the first thing that he does when he goes in there is he just blows this 9-year-old girl away. She had like muzzle shots on her face. He just like immediately blows her away. He shoots everybody, and then they go back and they try to kill the mom. They can't. The mom is armed. She comes out, and she's able to hit one of the guys.
I think it's the same guy that shot her daughter in the face.
Well, I mean, this is an ill-conceived plan. It's a stupid, stupid plan. It wasn't going to work. And, you know, you two dudes, you're going to be led by a woman.
Right.
A woman with delusions of grandeur. Like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing, Jason Bush? Anyway, I think she's still on death row.
Yeah. No, I think so. Yeah, all three of them got the death penalty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they'll be on death row forever.
Strangely, she was kicked out of the Standard Minutemen Alliance by Chris Simcox because he found her too detestable. Because she was bragging about going after the drug cartel. He was like, nope. By the pedo. He's like, nope, you can't be in here, lady. You're too immoral.
Well, it's the same kind of woman, honestly, that becomes like the QAnon weirdo, you know? And I don't remember the case anymore, but there was a case of a woman who got all into QAnon and then convinced her roommate to kill some guy because he was a secret pedo or something like that. And they like took him out to the desert and tortured him to death. And it was all bullshit. She was just a fucking psycho. And so I think it's the same kind of a thing where there's these psycho women that find men who are losers who will kill for like low grade pussy. And that's what, you know, people die. You know, this is what incels look like when they're like 40 and they haven't been laid in like over a decade. And so just being able to touch a boob, you know, they're into it. You know, they'll shoot a 9-year-old in the face all day long if, you know, they get that old crusty poon. So that's, you know, that's unfortunate, but I think that's the kind of thing that you see.
Oh, that didn't even occur to me as an angle. She probably wasn't even banging him.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Dude, what a disaster. What a disaster. Okay, let's talk about some of the issues. Let's summarize some of the issues with the Minutemen, because there's a real gripe here, okay? Like, and that's how movements just go off the rails. I heard you say that we don't have a movement, we have a cause. And I think that that's important, because when all of our ideals are attributed to people and they're carried on through people, we get the Nick Fuentes problem. We get the Donald Trump problem. We have to be more careful than this. And this is like an early iteration of Nick Fuentes and that story. It's like, we have a problem. We'll take anybody that we can get to try to solve this problem. No. You take a select few that are carefully vetted, well-spoken, have appropriate credentials. You take those and you put them out into the world and you hope for the best. But you don't take crazy women and pedophiles and weird fat neo-Nazis that have violent histories. Like, we need to be discerning. I can't state that enough.
Right. No, and it's not about purity spiraling. It's like, for the same reason why wanting to live in a white country is not purity spiraling, right? Like, it's because we want to have discernment. And we know that, just like with the metaphors for having a white country where, you know, oh, well, you know, you think that 15% Mexican is too much. It's like, well, would you drink water that's 15%, you know, cow shit, like, well, unless you're Indian, I guess. Like, you know, it's percentages matter. Like, small percentages can make a big difference. And the same thing is true of, you know, when you have people that are trying to champion white causes and prevent us from being genocided. You have to be careful about the kinds of people that you trust to do that. And yeah. So, yeah, you're always having to vet people, and there's nothing to, it's not purity spiraling when you see those red flags that all inevitably, every time, right? But every time, by the way, these people that you ignore the red flags, it always comes and it bites in the ass. It's like with women, right? Think of it this way. How many times, for the men in the audience, everyone will be able to relate to this. How many times have you gone out with a girl and you see all these red flags and you know in that moment when you're this is a deal breaker. This is a fatal flaw. But you ignore it because you want to get laid or because you're lonely whatever. Yeah. Right. And so you ignore it. And then when you break up, what is it always that you break up over? It's that thing you saw on your first date.
That is so true.
It's the thing you knew about the first day you knew about it. And yeah. You just ignored it because you wanted it to work so bad. And that's how people are with, you know, people like Trump and people like Nick Fuentes. It's like everyone knew right away, like, well, wait, hold on. He's Mexican. He's gay. Oh, I don't know about that. But he's funny. You end up like not caring after a while. But then whatever's going to happen in a big way, it'll be because he's a gay Mexican, you know.
And that's why, hey, girly, get out of here.
Like with Trump, it was the same thing. It's like, wait a second. His son-in-law is a Jew, you know. It's like, well, it's all right. You know, wait, hold on. The guy, he's Steve Miller. That guy's a Jew too. Well, that's probably fine. And then, you know,
But what do you do in dating Jews to avoid this problem? You have a list. And you just check off the list. Like if X, Y, and Z are present, like, no, that I can't date you. We need to do that with leadership. Like you can't be gay. You have to be white. You can't have any Jewish associations. And that's like a pretty good start. That's an excellent start right there. How about that?
You can't be insane.
Yeah. You can't be insane.
You have to be like a normal person, you know, like a person that like, I don't immediately think that you've maybe killed a small animal for fun or, you know, just that I wouldn't trust you. I have to trust you around kids. Like if I meet you and I feel like I couldn't trust you around children, you know, there's a problem.
Red flags have you ignored?
Are you asking? Know. Me personally?
Yeah. What's the worst one?
A girl I realized that she'd been a stripper, right?
So Devin!
This is how I figured it out. She was weird about touching money, and she made a comment about like how dirty money was, and that's why she didn't like to touch cash. And there was just something in my brain that was like she was a stripper, and she's having flashbacks to those dollar. She knows where those dollar bills have been, right? And I was right. In fact, I called her on it, just moments after she said that. I was like, "What? Were you a stripper?" And she's like, "How did you know that?" And I was like, "I don't know. Just you're weird about touching money, and it just kind of made sense, you know." And she was, and that was like the first major red flag of this girl that like I totally ignored because.
How long did you date her?
Too long.
How long?
Maybe like in the 6 months. But here's the thing. It was 6 months. And then like, I still get emails from her occasionally. Well, actually it's been a few years now, but like, this was like over 10 years ago. And she'd be married and emailing me. She's been married three times. I know this because in between husbands, she still emails.
Yeah, I bet though that she was psycho. Like, so fine.
Yes. Not anymore though. Not anymore. Yeah. Not anymore. Not these days.
Well, the wall gets us all.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Total psycho.
Mine's worse than that.
Oh, yeah? What'd you ignore?
Okay. I was dating this guy in LA. he was good on paper. He was really hot. I liked spending time with him, mild mannered. This was when I was a libertarian. And his sister was a lesbian and they already had a child because the wife of the sister used to bang dudes. And they wanted another child and they wanted it to be from her genetics. And so he was donating sperm to his sister-in-law.
Huh.
And okay. I knew, he told me this like right away. I'm like, I was like, no fucking way. Like there's just no way I'm ever going to get over this because you will be your son's uncle. Right.
That's being raised by lesbians, uncle.
Right. But I was 24 and I was a libertarian. So I was like, I'm being so judgmental and he's such a good man to do this for his sister. And it's just a kindness, the blah, da, 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 da. And then eventually I wised up. I was with him for a year and eventually I just couldn't get over that. And so I left in the night.
Were there other things that you would say that were associated with his inability to see what was wrong with that also that manifested in the relationship,
he was a libertarian. He didn't, you know, but I, at the time, so was I. So I was like, that's fine. And in LA, libertarian is as close to conservative as you're going to get.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was 24. So I was basically retarded, but no, I ghosted that guy after dating for a year. He was really, really pissed. Really, really pissed. But he couldn't understand why I had such a big problem with this. And honestly, I didn't understand at the time, like why I had such a big problem with it. I kept trying to override like my biological problem. Cause I was like, well, he's going to be the father of another child. If we ever have kids, I'm not going to be like,
well, and you're also going to have lesbian aunts for your kid.
Yeah.
You know, and you're always going to have these fucking fags in your life, like the rest of your life.
Oh God, that was so stupid.
Yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it happens. But yeah, that's the thing. People ignore these red flags and next thing you know, like, you're going to war with Israel again because
I know, right?
You know,
but everybody acts like these are things that you find out down the road. No, you almost always have all of the information.
Yeah.
Like, almost always.
Yeah, the only people that acts, I mean, with Trump, it's like the people that are acting surprised are doing that because they don't want to feel stupid for, you know, ignoring all the people that were screaming at them that he's owned by Jews, you know, for like 8 years straight.
Emmeline, get out of here. I don't know. Ask Grandma. Get out of here.
Let me go to our...
For heaven's sakes.
Our main screen here. And it's going to play the intro real quick.
You're watching Outlaw.
There we are.
Outlaws.
Outlaws.
All right. Let's get some supers.
Let's do it.
Send your super chats into Blonde in the Belly of the Beast or Rumbles into Devin or PayPal's linked below. All of our links are linked below. That's redundant.
And I will
go first.
Sure.
Or I can go first.
Let's see here. Likes to watch. Says, still so damn happy that you two are doing this podcast. Nothing but respect for you both. Well, that's very nice of you.
I'm so happy we're doing this podcast, too.
Yeah, and it's very generous of you, likes to watch. Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan says, thanks to the gayest generation, you don't speak German, but you better learn Spanish.
Yeah.
This is true. This is true. I've never been able to learn Spanish. I've tried a couple times. It's the whole like, yeah. I honestly, it's not that it's technically hard. It's more that I get like angry. Like, why don't they just learn English?
I don't want them to learn English. Spanish. They're going to be increasingly less difficult or more difficult to identify.
That's true. Well, no, I can just tell by looking at them. So, all right, then we got. The Shogun says /. Then the Shadow Band says good topic. Glad to hear about some people trying to do positive things instead of just evil people. Well, you must have brought that in early in
Sorry,
the show.
Buddy.
Sorry for the twist at the end there.
That person's at home like, not again.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It started good. You know, it's like a horror film where like the family's all happy and they find the new house and they're like, oh, yeah, this is a nice room. Oh, what's behind this poster over here? Don't look back there. And then like the movie gets scary. It's the same thing. You know? All right. Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan says the coming recession is thanks to us, but I need to take a poll. What false flag would you need to get behind a ground invasion? I need boots on the ground so I can kick the Kalergi plan into overdrive. I don't know what kind of false flag would happen that would get people to want to invade Iran. I don't think it's a very popular...
Is he talking about us specifically? Because I can't even imagine this.
Yeah, scenario. Well, nothing would get me behind it, but I think he means like just like Americans. Like what would have to happen for them to be like, oh yeah, fuck Iran, you know, like to get, well, to get the idiot boomers on board, it'd be real easy. I mean, you could just bomb like a McDonald's and say it was, you know, Iran.
A light terrorist attack would probably do it.
Yeah. Like literally anything. Then they'd be like,
I think they're going to have to shoot up another gay club though.
Yeah. I mean, something like that, that would do it. But, I don't know. I don't think it'll get the most people won't believe it though either, because there's such a distrust of the media and everything, especially with AI now. I mean, it's hard to get people to believe things that are actually real, you know, to get them to believe in that. So you're going to have a lot of distrust of any kind of false flag that would come in right now. So. All right, yeah. Then we got the shadow ban says, okay, not that not that positive, but gotta try. So the shadow ban saw the exciting conclusion there.
Dude, we've covered some positive stories. What about the San Francisco Vigilance Committee? That was kind of fun.
That was fun. That was a good one. That included a lot of positivity.
About how you only have to kill 3 to 5 people to really send ripples through a community and keep people in line. That is a very positive message sent from outlaws.
The Rufol story was pretty good too.
It was, yeah. You although know, he did rape and murder that.
Well, it had a happy ending. So. You know, it is the opposite of this story, I guess. All right. Then we got Professor Chaos says, I'll check out the replay later. Guys, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And then we got Tom O'Hawk says, Devin watched Potato Hurricane a few days ago. Uncle Ruckus at the beginning was going hard on his own people. I almost felt bad for the guy. Yeah, he's talking about there was a preacher who is fed up with niggers. And he's just like, it's a black guy. It's a black preacher going like, you know, y'all are stupid. You know, like he's just he was like the most anti-black preacher I've ever seen. But he's is that his actual name, Uncle Ruckus or Ruckus? I don't remember what his actual name is. But yeah, he's got a bunch of videos. I think you might be able to still find him.
What do you think
YouTube.
About Jesse Lee Peterson? While we're talking about that,
there's allegations about him too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're real, but you should look into that.
Okay. That sucks, because doing a show was really fun.
Oh, you've been on a show?
I did the hot seat. Yeah, and he was like, have you forgiven your mother for ruining your life? I was like, what? I was like, I'm doing fine. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He maybe the allegations are false.
I don't even know about this. Oh, I'm looking in the live chat.
Yeah,
is this true? Can someone DM me any of this on Twitter? I don't know what's going on.
They're not great, and they have a. I don't know. They have a possibility of being true. So.
Man, sucks.
It involves homosexuality.
Ah, oh, really? Is it kids too?
No. Luckily, it's not kids. It's not kids.
Okay. Is it rapey?
Slightly. It's a little bit. It's a little bit.
All right, I gotta look this up now.
Yeah, it's not great. And again, I don't know. I don't know if anything ever came of it. I remember when that first happened, it had a little ring of truth to it, like it did. Had a little ring of truth to it. And, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. Love and Division says, please check your Odyssey. I'll definitely check that. In fact, I'll check it right now. Oh, it's not there on my Odyssey. What are you talking about? Unless I have to refresh Odyssey. Did it break? Oh, it did break. Oh, there's two on Odyssey. Weird.
Hey, look at that.
All right, let's see here. Love and Division says, great show. I had some tree work done today. A crew of 7 Mexicans working for a white-owned company. Later, someday, I had some chimney work done. A Mexican and a black did the work for a white-owned company. For people's information, I made an Antelope Hill published unboxing video. Well, that's cool.
That's happened to me, too, when I got my roof done. It's like a white guy and a white lady that I talked to, and then it's just a crew of 7 Mexicans.
Yeah, that shit's bullshit. I fucking hate that. Any, if you're a subcontractor that's doing that, you are also an enemy of white people. I have to do it to compete. Well, then don't fucking, you're in the wrong business.
Yeah.
Because you're basically incentivizing white replacement.
Yeah.
So if that's how you put food on your table is by incentivizing white replacement, fuck you.
Yeah.
How about that? Fuck you. So, and that's all I'll say about that. Yeah, it's really fucking infuriating because... if you by the way, that goes for if you own a business of any kind, it doesn't have to be like some kind of manual labor thing. If you're not giving preferential treatment to white people, I don't care if like you find a better candidate. We're kind of in a spot where you have to tribe up and you have to like maybe take that as an opportunity to train someone up. You know, find a white guy that you can make a better employee that maybe you know you're gonna have to invest a little bit more into. To have that that racial nepotism working because we need that. We really need that.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Then we have Based and Butterfly Pilled said, thoughts about Amy Bach getting 41 years for welfare feeding our future fraud in Minnesota, possible candidate for an Outlaws episode. Also,
oh, I saw this.
I hope you'll continue to stream on Odyssey. Seems a little more legitimate as a home for dissidents. Yeah, I'll keep it going. I don't know what Casey's talking about. You know, though?
Amy Bach, the convicted ringleader of the $250 million Feeding Our Future fraud scheme in Minnesota, was sentenced to more than 40 years on Thursday. The judge handed Bach a 500-month sentence and ordered her to repay $243 million to the federal government. A jury found her guilty on multiple criminal counts. Wire fraud, blah, 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 blah. She orchestrated the largest pandemic fraud case in the country, which diverted tens of millions in government money meant to feed hungry children. Well, where did it go?
She's Somali or?
No, she's white.
Is she white or is she white?
Bock, B-O-C-K. She doesn't look Jewish, but I failed before.
Anyway, so Tomahawk says Uncle Ruckus was a character from the cartoon The Boondocks. Oh, that's right. He was a self-hating black man. I never watched that show because I honestly it was too black for me. I was just I'd be awake during, you know, Adult Swim and then the black show would come on. I'd be like, all right, here's the show for niggers. But I don't remember that. I remember the show, but yeah.
She rerouted money that was going to pay minority children, poor minority children. So depending on where the money goes, and it was pandemic money, I kind of don't give a shit about this. She got 42 years in prison for a financial crime like this. If she were black, nothing would have happened to her.
No, absolutely not.
Huh, this is crafty. I don't know. I might have an unpopular take on this one. I need to learn more. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's we're good over here.
Okay. Let me reload. 42 years for a financial crime seems insane. Unless you're Jewish. Okay.
Then it should be death penalty.
Death penalty. All right. Gen X Rebellion. Linked by blood, bound by honor. Only we can pass judgment on the dishonored because the opposite of blind obedience is critical judgment. We should never be blindly obedient. I mean, a lot of people should. But the people that are watching the show should not, because that means that they're already in a free thinking realm. Oh, Devin, I forgot to tell you. The strangest thing happened to me the other day. So I go to like a random park in town, this little park. And my kids are playing with this other set of cute little kids, and they've got cute little names. And then I just like, I'm casually talking to the parents, and you know, I'm asking what they do. And then they're asking me what I do. I'm like, oh, I do political commentary. And then the husband was like, I know, I'm a huge fan of you and Devin.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that is so cool.
That's pretty fun.
It made my day. So he's a big fan of you. He says hello.
I don't think that would ever happen in the wild out here.
Well, you're anonymous.
No, but I mean, just I don't think the people who are out here are our demographic. It's a lot of grizzled old cowboys and rich boomers that don't like to be in the cold in the winter, so they come here.
You might be surprised. Once you face fag for a woman, and that woman being me, and I pressure you into face fagging, you might just be getting recognized all the time.
Well, maybe. I guess we'll have to see.
It's actually really awesome. It's fun. Let's see. Stephen Campbell, if environmental essentialism and the infinite malleability of man were true, then the left would be correct. The blank slate rightist can never win. Surprised it took many people this long to get it. Well, it's a painful realization. That's why. People don't want to recognize that genetics are set and that you can't improve things with environment. I still have sets of friends that like I argue with about this with them all the time. And I find it so annoying. They think that things can be altered, especially disease expression, can be massively altered through toxic avoidance and healthy living and things like that. So I was trying to tell them, which is true to some degree, but I was trying to tell them about juvenile Huntington's disease. So like if you inherit this disease, you are going to get juvenile Huntington's disease. Like there's nothing you can do. Like
right.
You can avoid heavy metals and you can live a clean, like it doesn't matter. You're fucked. You're going to get it. And they're like, well, maybe if the parents didn't back. I'm like, listen, like I understand where you're coming from, but it's a painful realization that genetics are, they predetermine a massive part of who you are, your behavior, your life. And like people don't want to hear it. They want to feel like they have control. But it's also, you know, it feels good to realize that you don't really have that much control. You just give up the control. It's fine.
Right. And I think there's also people that they're just not – they made poor choices with you know, who they had children with and don't want to admit that maybe their children suck because of, you know – because of who they are or who their partner is, you know, stuff like that. You know, like,
yeah, but you have to also recognize that you've made a mistake too. And that's really hard for people.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that. Did you know that it is, and this should be reassuring to parents. I don't know why everybody freaks out about this, that everything that you do for your child, you're not really capable of improving their outcome, but you can make their outcome worse through bad behavior. It's like you can't increase their IQ. It doesn't really matter how much you read to them in terms of increase in IQ and things like that. I mean, it just doesn't really matter that much. But what it does mean is that you can't fuck up in any really big way. Like you can't beat your kids. You can't, you know, you can't abuse them. You can't abandon them. Things like that will alter them negatively. But, you know, parenting is just about hanging out with your kids, and that's pretty much all you can do. That should be reassuring to people.
Yeah, just don't abuse your kids, and they'll turn out halfway like you.
Yay! Oh, I'm going. Vincent Pendragon. Any chance you guys can do a promotion of white groups we can support? Also, is it just me, but it feels like the majority of everyone doesn't understand the political identity and is treating it more like sports, blue versus red. I think that's That's true, but we're going through some growing pains right now where we are more explicitly defining our political ideology. And I'm here for it. I like it. I think we had this big break in terms of Catholicism, and we're having this with Fuentes and like Andrew Tate and things like that. And I think that what a lot of us are realizing is that this is race-based. Like, that's it. This is a race-based struggle. And that makes things very simple. So I don't know. I have great hope for whatever this movement is.
Yeah. Sometimes I do.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, and any promotion of white groups we can support. I like Nova. I like Patriot Front. And I like Return to the Land. What about you?
Yeah, no, I obviously think Arvall's cool. I've talked to him a couple times. Seems like he gets it. I obviously hope that their current legal thing works out. We'll know a lot about what whites are capable of or able to legally accomplish after. I mean, the good thing about what he's doing is a lot of it will set precedent. And unfortunately, it's already kind of had an effect in that there have been states now that are passing legislation to prevent a similar thing from occurring in their state. And in fact, I think Arkansas is even engaged in that as well. So if you start getting legislation in your state to basically design to bar white people from using any kind of loopholes to create their own community, you're just back to square one, which is you can still do it. You just can't tell people about it, you know?
Exactly.
You can't do it in an organized way, which sucks because that really limits what you're able to do, because Jews do it all the time. In fact, there's like there's a Jewish community that is, I mean, they're not just, I mean, they got Jew money, right? So they went out, I think it's like in West Virginia or I don't remember where, but it's like in some beautifully remote forested area where they're clear cutting like this whole area out and like building these suburban looking homes. And it's like, it's advertised as a Jewish on their website as a Jewish community, and that you can apply to live there and no one's going to sue them. Maybe someone should. Maybe some white billionaire should be suing these Jewish groups that are basically doing the exact same thing.
All going to be in one place? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, that could open up. Anyway, I can't really say what my brain's doing there.
Our brains are going there, Devin. It's fine.
Yeah. So the as far as Patriot Front, I've never talked to those guys, but I have no reason to dislike them. I think what I've seen of them is good, and they're white, so that's good too.
Yeah. Bill Peterson, Blonde, please host Patriot Front Leader on your show. Thomas Rousseau, he is the real deal. I really like him. I had him on the Backlash. I'll text him and see if I can't get him on. I think I'm going to have Arvel on this coming week, and then Blood Satellite. You did their show, right?
Yes.
So I think I'm gonna do an interview with him on my channel in the coming week. Glad you got away from the neurotic beta former co-host. Which one? I got a few. I have laid waste to my past male co-hosts.
That ends now.
I know, it ends now. It's funny because like the idea of betraying Devin horrifies me so much that I think it's because I respect you. That really changes the female behavior. Rise White Diaspora. Okay, L Quakey 2J says, the Feeding Our Future fraud case had 79 people charged. Some other names who have pled guilty are Aisha Hassan Hussein. Oh, okay. Sara Sharif Osman. Okay, so this is some Somali scam. Fadumo Muhammad Youssef. Damn. So they sent the white lady down as a some kind of patsy. Is that what you're telling me? 42 years.
She's definitely a coal burner.
Yeah. Probably. All right, I'm good over here. I think you got two more.
I got two more, you said?
I think
Oh, so. I got one. I think I got one more. Let me see here. Unless I'm going to scroll up, make sure I didn't miss a different one. I got one more. I got, let's see here. Revolver 357 says, found out my wife has HD
while ago. What's Huntington's that? Disease.
Oh, I thought it was like high def. It's been rough thinking about it, about if my kids get it. It's 50-50, basically. Thanks for the reminder of being fucked. Ugh, if you don't, or if you don't laugh.
That's terrible. I don't know. I'm not going to give you advice, but I'll tell you what I would do in that situation. I would not have children. I just couldn't do it to my kids. 50-50 chance of their kids getting a horrible...
I don't know much about that. What's the...
Huntington's disease is a genetic disorder that causes like progressive breakdown of nerves in the brain. And so you become like basically in a
like early dementia
state. It's worse than that because you die, but it starts in your 30s or your 40s.
That sucks.
It progressively worsens over like a decade. You get all these motor things. It's like MS, but considerably worse.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Because your wife is not going to be able to help you take care of your kids.
Right.
Because she has Huntington's disease.
And there's no like gene therapy kind of a thing or something like
there's
that?
There's no treatment. Like once you have it, it's like Lou Gehrig's disease. Like you find out you have it and you're just toast. You're on a timeline. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm so sorry, man. I'm so sorry. That's such a nightmare. But yeah, I just wouldn't have kids.
Well, Revolver 357, hopefully, hopefully you get the lucky side of that coin flip, you know, the 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think on that positive note, I think we're all cleared up over here.
Good God, is that our last super chat?
That is it.
Oh, man, that's a depressing one to end on. Sorry, Revolver. And sorry, audience. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Rebecca Hargraves. You can catch me on my YouTube channel. That is Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. I do a show with Cameron McGregor typically on Thursdays at noon. This week we are filming on Friday at noon because he's got some like, I don't know, world traveler scheduling conflict or whatever the fuck he's doing. So we're filming on Friday. Follow me on X at blondes_tweets and we will see you next Wednesday. Devin, do you want to give your
You can follow
places
me
where they can find
on
you.
X at black_pilled. And if you go to blackpill.com, it'll take you to the Odyssey channel. And also, I do a stream on that Odyssey channel as well as the Rumble channel. If you're watching over on Rumble, every Saturday, the Insomnia stream, 10 o'clock p.m. Pacific time, where we cover all kinds of fun stuff. And we're just generally kind of, we have fun. We have fun, they would say. We like to have fun over there. So join us on Saturday nights. Anyway, and next Wednesday, we'll be back here at 5 o'clock here on Rumble, YouTube, and on Odyssey. In the meantime, you guys have a good rest of your week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.